Welcome to Agency Highway. This is a podcast for digital agencies and freelancers who want to grow their business, earn more, and work less. Each episode, you'll hear from agency owners that are killing it, meet epic people that can help you along your journey, or just listen to me ramble on about something I think is cool. Head to agencyhighway.com for transcripts, action notes, and to join the community. I'm your host, James Rose. Now, let's get into it. This podcast is brought to you by ContentSnare. ContentSnare helps digital agencies get content from their clients on time, in the right format, without email. If you've ever needed to get content from clients, you'll know how painful it can be. You end up constantly chasing them for weeks or months, and by the time it's ready, there's a 900-long email trail full of massive images and a couple of brochures from 6 years ago. ContentSnare makes this a thing of the past by collecting content from your clients in the right format the first time and does all the chasing for you. Try it on your next project by signing up at ContentSnare.com. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Agency Highway. Today we have an awesome guest on called Brent Weaver, who many of you probably already know from YouGuru's fame, and I assume many other fames, but that's the one I know you from, Brent. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, James, awesome to be here.
Now, look, from what I understand, you grew an agency, and I just love one of my favorite points was that it was in Denver, because I freaking love Denver so much, and that seems to surprise a lot of people. But do you still live there?
I live in the Denver metro area. Yeah, I live in a nice town called Castle Rock, about half an hour south of Denver.
Well, I'm jealous. But you went on to sell this agency, and obviously for many of us, that's kind of the dream, right? Like at some point, you know, exiting, maybe to work on something else or whatever. But yeah, I imagine that was quite the journey, and there's a lot that agency owners can learn. So let's dig in, hey?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, and I'm happy to start wherever you want, but for me, it was about, how to make, kind of keep the main thing. So, I was running my agency. I loved serving our clients. I loved serving all the cool things that we did, but I started to find that I had this other passion to teach and coach and train people, and that I was really good at it, and we were getting, you know, a week wouldn't go by where we wouldn't get like a half a dozen thank you letters from all of these agency owners that I was sharing our information with. And, after looking at that for, about 2 years living in that space where all these people are telling me how much they appreciate what we're doing for their agency owners, I just kind of woke up one day and said, you know what, I want to go do that full time. I want to make that my main thing. And the path to doing that was selling my agency.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we're kind of in a similar spot. Like my passion's more on the software side of things, like building stuff. But in the process, we've created a lot of content to help agency owners like this podcast, for example. And that exact same thing where you get like thank you letters where people have actually taken the time to write like an email about a podcast, to me, that just blows my mind every time I get one of those emails, because it's like someone's been listening to this, like walking the dog, and they remembered to go home and write an email when they got home. Like that is huge.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely get the good feels when like helping just people with content and stuff like that. But I guess in your agency life, the stuff I'd like to cover, because I did a little bit of research about, what you
thought. You did homework, James. Uh-oh, I'm in for it.
Yeah, and I don't do that very often, so you should feel privileged. But I'd like to talk about sort of your early struggles and especially growing struggles, because I know this is a pretty big issue for a lot of people. Like they might get that first one or two staff. They're not entirely sure what tasks they should give them. Those sort of questions have been coming up in the Facebook group quite a bit. And then like how to get over, I guess, that first, like, I don't know, like where do you think the biggest hurdles were? Like, is, you know, going from 3 people to 10 people or something, you know, like where are the biggest issues that people are facing? Where those roadblocks are and how we're going to get through them?
Yeah. I think the most basic struggle that I see early stage or, you know, smaller agencies, kind of 1 to 3 person space, is that, you know, the owner is usually wearing all of the hats. And the thing that we maybe are most comfortable with is like the service that we provide to our clients. So if you're a designer, you're most comfortable like with designing stuff. And so when you think about growing your team, you think, okay, I need to hire another designer to like get more designers, right? Or more developers or more content people or whatever. And so we think in terms of that context of like, this is the thing that I've been making all my money doing, so that if I want to do, you know, make more money, I should basically, you know, hire more people like myself. And so I think that becomes one of the biggest challenges. And I think the ultimately the solution to that is really thinking about your business more in like four or so core chunks, right? There's like you, the owner, the leader of the business, like where is this thing going? There's, you know, how you market and build awareness for your business, how you actually convert that awareness into clients, like sales. And then there's like the delivery, right? The fulfillment of your work, right? Which is kind of the last part of the machine or the model. And so I think when I go in and work with people, that's one of the main things that we look at is like, okay, cool. There's these major four functions. You know, which of these can we get you out of next and bring in people? Like, what's the next hire? Because it can't just be, you know, hire designer, 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 designer. Because one day you wake up and you've got like four designers or developers working for you, and you have nobody that's actually selling for you. You have nobody that's dedicated to marketing for the business. So you have all these people to pay, you know, all these mouths to feed, but like the demand's not there, or it's totally dependent on you, right? So starting to think about this more as a business, not just a bunch of people that, you know, do creative work together.
Yeah. And I think I've seen a few questions like that come up lately in other people's groups as well, or like things around that whole, I guess, feast or famine cycle, where it's like that they're all doing the work, or they're all doing sales.
or they're all doing the work, and then the work like dries up, and then you're like, oh my gosh, I need to go find like 10 more projects like tomorrow to keep these, you know, these four developers busy or whatever, right?
Yeah. So what do you think is the best place for someone to hire first?
I mean, I think the thing you need to decide on is, you know, where do you want to spend your time, right? And think about it more in these terms of seats or hats, right? And instead of like, you know, bringing on somebody that's just doing more development or more design, but which hat can you get out of next, right? Is it, you know, could, if you really don't like selling, should you bring in somebody to focus on sales, so that while you're, you know, the wizard delivering and delighting your clients, there's somebody out there that's fielding the leads, that's out there working with, you know, the opportunities that are coming in, so that when you finish that next project, you have the next one lined up. So, and, you know, or having somebody out there focused 100% of their time on marketing, right? Like, so marketing is not just that thing you do once a month when everything else is done, or you have that that panic, that fear that creeps in when you're like, oh my God, we don't have any leads, right? So I think it's figuring out where you really want to spend your time, and then hire for that core business function, you know, and really focus there, right?
So I guess it'd kind of be like a part like what you don't like doing and what you're not good at, I guess, is probably the things you should get rid of first.
Well, right. So you can like, I mean, like I'm really good at sales, but because I spend most of my time in the leadership position in the business, I'm not available 40 hours a week to sell. So, you know, we're typically getting 20 to 30-ish, you know, scheduled appointments for our salesperson every week from our marketing systems. That's a really time consuming thing to like work on fielding that many leads, following up with that many customers. You know, even though I'm really good at sales, I maybe have time to do 3 to 5 conversations a week. I can't do 20 conversations a week.
Yeah.
So like, you know, just because you're good at something might not even mean that you're really the person that's meant to do it for, you know, for the business's goals. Right.
Yeah, for sure. I think this that whole like separating the business into the different hats is cool, right? That's somewhat similar to the E-Myth, I guess. They talk a little bit about that concept of creating like an org chart or something, yeah. And then trying to, you know, working out which roles you're currently doing. Obviously, for some people, that's all of them. Yeah. And then trying to put people into those roles one at a time, like even getting one person to do maybe a couple.
Well, I mean, look at it like, okay, so if you have one full-time producer, so if your business is content, and that person is doing high value deliverables, right? So if they're if they're creating, you know, content assets for your client, right? Let's say that they have, depending on how willing to work they are, they have somewhere between 1,000 and 1,600 like billable hours, right? Because they're not going to bill all 2,000 hours they work in a year. So your agency's billable is $100 an hour, just to say it's like super nice and clean here. That means that that person should be billing somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000 a year in billable. So if you have one content person or one designer or one developer and they're not producing at that level, that means that you probably have a marketing and sales problem, that they don't have a full enough pipeline to actually be at capacity. So I was talking to an agency the other day and they had, you know, like three full-time producers, yet the business was doing like sub $200,000 a year in revenue. So I'm looking at that going, wow, three full-time producers should be generating somewhere between $300,000 and $450,000 if your hourly is $150. Now, the crux of this was this agency's supposed hourly was $150. So the numbers get even worse, right? And so really what the problem was is it was a marketing and sales problem. They needed a dedicated resource to actually fill that pipeline so that they could be doing $500,000-$700,000 in billable work with those three full-time people, right? So they were thinking to me like, Brent, oh, we need to hire another developer. I'm like, no, you need somebody to be dedicated to marketing and dedicated to sales, and they will fill those people's schedules with awesome clients and awesome billable work.
That's awesome. And I'm just like, I've just realized that this is something I need to do, you know, like I've stepped out of the agency sort of role mostly, and I need to do this with content snare now, you know, and with Agency Highway, and I'm like already like spinning, cogs are turning to the how, what roles I've got to sort of start creating to fill later. But yeah, now I'm like, I got to stop thinking about that.
And the other thing that I'll say on this too is there's one, and this happens, this has come up a lot in our community, and it might be helpful for your audience, right? Separate marketing from sales. So a lot of small agencies, they'll go out and hire a salesperson and they will fail miserably at bringing on a salesperson. Because they hire somebody who's good at selling and then they say, okay, go find leads. And, you know, the salesperson's like, okay. Like, so they just do like basic non-leveraged activity. They start cold calling, right? They start calling people, you know, blah, 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 right? And they end up like failing or getting burned out because they're actually not good at generating leads. They're just good at selling, building relationships, rapport. Finding need, finding problem, and actually closing the business, right? So you need to separate it out in your head. Like, cool, there's marketing. Like, marketing is a function in your business, and sales is a function. I showed my community this. I showed my community a marketing person's calendar, and it was like open, like Monday through Friday. It was like open for like deep analytical build work, like building funnels, building, you know, content calendars, building out content. You know, building out Facebook ad funnels, all this kind of stuff. I showed them what a good salesperson's calendar looked like. And, you know, Monday through Friday, it was like 36 appointments, right? It was like booked solid, right? You can't do deep, thoughtful marketing work if you're always on appointments, right? And so that's really what you want, is you want somebody who's focused 100% on demand gen and then focus on converting that demand into actual deals.
That's freaking gold, actually. Is there a point that you think someone should look at hiring sales? Like, I know a big holdback for a lot of people I know is, I guess, how much they're making and they just straight up can't afford to hire a salesperson. Like, is there a transition point you think makes sense? Like, I don't know, whether it's revenue or something.
Well, so, I mean, a dedicated salesperson should be generating, like, where the money makes sense is they should be responsible for somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million in annual revenue, right? So if you're currently at 250 or, you know, less than that, if you're at $150,000 and you're like, cool, I'm going to go out there and hire a salesperson, you know, you need to be able to paint a picture for really good salespeople to get to, I think, six figures in their income within like a year to 18 months. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with people that really aren't, they aren't like salespeople. They're like appointment setters, or, you know, they maybe can help you, with, you know, some basic lead gen and kind of cold calling people and stuff like that. But if you're talking about, you know, somebody who can work with a business doing between $1 and $10 million a year and go through a discovery process with them and build a solution, do a proposal presentation, you know, win a 5 to 6 figure account, like those people want to make $100,000 to $250,000 a year. So if you run the numbers, you think, okay, if, you know, what am I willing to give in terms of deal flow? Like if I was making $500,000 and they were doing 20%, cool, that's 6 figures. If I'm making $1 million and they're doing 15%, cool, that's 150K, that's 6 figures, right? So that's kind of like roughly like you don't necessarily need to be making that today, but that needs to be the game that you're playing. You need to be willing to fund a lead gen system to help a salesperson get to $1 million a year. So if that's part of your plan, your vision, then probably hiring a salesperson is the right fit. If you're totally awesome running a 250 to 300, 400K a year small agency, then I would typically recommend that, you know, focus on getting really high quality leads for the owner to close and block out, you know, 3 to 5 hours a week of sales time for the owner and build a really solid appointment funnel and systematize and automate the heck out of the system to free up the owner's time. But like you'd be better off having the owner sell versus bringing on a salesperson.
Yeah, nice. But so yeah, but then when you are actually able to fill up a salesperson with those 36 appointments a week or whatever, if you have a marketing system that's doing that, or you're willing to invest in one, that's when you should look at bringing on a salesperson.
Yeah. And if that's what you want, right? If you're trying to do, you know, I was talking to an agency owner today who, you know, he's already doing $1 million a year in revenue. And he's like, he's the main salesperson and he's got, you know, 5 or 6 plates that he's constantly spinning. For him to get to 2 to 3 million, you know, either we need to take off one of his other seats and give him twice as much bandwidth to sell, right? Because the numbers are really easy. If he spends 5 hours a week or 10 hours a week in sales right now, he's making $1 million, cool. We need to get him spending twice as much of that time to get to 2 million, right? Likely, right? More than likely, if he is going after the same types of clients, same level of proposals, like there's a couple other levers that you could pull there. But more or less, like he needs to spend twice as much time in sales. So we did this kind of activity dump with him today where he listed out where he was spending all of his time. Cool. We found 10 hours a week that was like low value things that could be delegated. We got rid of that stuff and boom, now he's got twice as much time to sell. All, you know, we got to work a little bit on the lead gen systems too, but all things equal, if he gets twice as many leads, he should be at 2 million within 12 to 18 months.
Nice. Do you touch on something there that I think is super important that a lot of people don't do is the time tracking. Like it's something I try to do every few months, you know, just track time for a couple of weeks to see where my own time's going as well as the team, right? Like I know time tracking kind of sucks to ask your team to do it. Like some people are very against it. Some people are for it, but it's really good to have that idea of where exactly what you said, find those low value activities that can be removed.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's an interesting study out there. I don't know if you have ever been into like diet or nutrition, but there's this really interesting study that where basically they looked at, you know, the effect on people's diet if they simply log and track their food, right? Not like following any particular diet, not following any particular nutrition advice, but if we just actually ask people to log their food, will their diet improve, right? Will they lose weight? Will they achieve their goals by just simply logging their food? And what they found was the answer to that question is yes. Just simply by keeping a food diary, people's diet improves. Why? Because we all know what we should and shouldn't eat, right? Like we don't need one more diet book to tell us that, like, you know, that eating McDonald's is bad, right? So if 4 days in a row, you're like, cool, on the way home from work, I got, you know, a double cheeseburger as a snack before I went home and ate dinner with my family. Like, cool. If I see that like 3 or 4 days in a row and I'm gaining weight, I could probably like subconsciously without even thinking about it go, yeah, I should probably stop doing that, right? We don't need to have a diet book to explain it to us, right?
Yeah.
So the same thing happens with time is that if we simply journal our time, track our time, right? Journal, track, whatever you want to do. We actually are going to improve how we spend our time. We're going to just subconsciously, we're going to immediately see opportunities to improve our day and things like that. So easy, like, you know, quick little tactic for your listeners is, you know, you don't necessarily need to think about this in terms of tracking your time for the rest of your life. wouldn't be a bad habit to get into, but it's not required. You could actually just track your time for like 2 weeks and kind of see if there's anything glaring. Hey, like I didn't realize, but so this actually happened to me. I'll give you a quick little story, James. So I tracked my time and I found out that I was spending about 20 hours of my week doing training and support with my existing clients. And this is probably back in 2008, 2009. I was like, holy smokes, I'm spending 20 hours. Like, no wonder we're not getting any sales because I'm not out there selling, right? So yeah. I actually started looking at that and I said, okay, well, one of my members of my team was pretty friendly and he knew how to solve a lot of problems. So I was like, hey, you're now our support person. I bet about 10 hours of my week is going to go to you. So instead of me doing support for 10 hours, you're going to do support for 10 hours. And then basically with the training, I did the exact same thing. I took another one of our team members who was pretty good with the CMS that we were using at the time. And I said, cool, you're now going to be like the trainer. You're going to do all the client training. Whenever we have a training session, like you're going to master like this seat, right? And I just like offloaded those things to my team members. You know, they became busier and more useful in the business, but that doesn't really matter, right? Even if they weren't, like I have 20 hours now that I can go focus on business development. So what happened over the next 12 months? We literally doubled our revenue just because I now have 20 hours extra a week to sell and market and be out there meeting businesses, right? So, you know, you don't necessarily need to track your time all the time, but if you find that you have, or you think that you're the bottleneck or that a team member is the bottleneck, it's a really good exercise to say, hey, like just keep a quick time journal. Like I'm not using this as a means to potentially fire you or whatever. Like I want to help you spend more of your time doing what's really valuable for the business and help you spend less of your time doing the things that are, you know, that are not really giving you energy.
For sure. I really like that concept of journaling too. Like, cause time tracking kind of has that negative connotation for a lot of people. And cause I've been interviewing a lot of people lately about a potential automation, sort of course and consulting thing I'm going to do. And that's a question I ask everyone, like, do you track your time? Do you track your employees' time? And some people are like, no, I'd never do that.
Okay. For agencies though, like if they're billing by the hour.
True.
Or they're measuring their business in any way, shape, or form by budgeting, like, you know, it'd be like a jewelry store saying, like, it's cool, we're not going to track all of our gold inventory. Like, you know, like if you're out there, like literally built, like if you're telling your clients, like, hey, this is going to be a 30-hour project, and you're not tracking your team's time, or they're not logging their time, like if that's your agency's model, if you're building your estimates fixed priced based on some type of internal hours budget, or you're building your pricing model, whether you tell your clients that you're billing by the hour or not, if you're using time as a function of measurement in your business and you are not tracking that time within your business, you know, you're literally the jewelry store that like doesn't care about inventory. So what happens is people are just like walking out the back with all the Rolexes, and you have no idea and you're oblivious. It's probably why your business is unprofitable.
Yeah, nailed it. Brutal, but nailed it. So I was thinking of going on and talking about like growing struggles, as I've seen. You've talked about that a little bit before, but I think it might be better to focus on winning bigger deals at this point, because I can sort of visualize people listening to this thinking, you know, it'd be great to be able to fill, you know, a salesperson with $1 million or whatever. Like that might be so far out of their reality to add $1 million revenue. That is probably going to require bigger deals, right, than what they're currently doing. So, yeah, I know that's a big topic of yours, right? So, yeah, do you have any advice on...
Just, Brent, go. Solve in... 6 seconds, right? How do you get bigger deals, right?
I know this is a huge topic. I know it's huge, but like, do you have any, like, where should someone start, I guess, in making this transition?
So a guy that I interviewed, Jonathan Stark, he has this phrase that I love, right? And so I'm going to pass it on to your audience. You know, the first thing is kind of find expensive problems, right? So there's that part of it, right? So, but how do you find expensive problems, right? Well, first of all, you have to find people that have a lot of money, right? Like, I think we can just say like prerequisite for selling big deals is finding people that have like really big pockets. And I'm not saying that in like a, like we're going out there and finding people to take advantage of. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. Like, I'm saying like, okay, if you want to sell $100,000 project, let's say you're a web designer and, or, you know, a digital marketer and you want a six figure account. Well, you have to kind of do the math, right? The Small Business Administration says that you should be spending 7 to 8% of your annual revenue on marketing. That's a rule of thumb across every industry. Every industry obviously is very different. Some spend more than that, some spend less than that. But let's just use that number as kind of a guide. Actually, let's just use 10% because that makes the math easier. Mm-hmm. So if you're talking about $1 million a year business, that means their annual marketing advertising budget is $100,000. So if you were to find a seven-figure business, it is possible if they spent 100% of their budget, maybe a tiny bit more because we use that 7 to 8% number. So they're literally spending 100% or more of their marketing budget with you as a service provider. Look, I run a seven-figure business. I'm not going to go spend my entire marketing and advertising budget with one vendor on one project because I'm not an idiot, right? Mm-hmm. Likely, I'm going to spend, you know, a small percentage on, let's say, a half a dozen to a dozen different initiatives, okay? So, you know, would I spend $30,000 building my marketing website? Yeah, sure, I did, right? Would I spend $25,000 to $30,000 on the rebrand for my company? Yeah, definitely did that, right? Would I spend, you know, we spent $250,000 in 1 year on Facebook ads, right? Like, just giving you guys some context of where a business has to be at for those types of budgets. If you're trying to get a $100,000 website or marketing project, like, you need to add some multiples to that. You probably need to be targeting businesses that are doing between $3 and $15 million. So if you're going to like the local chamber of commerce, like, hey, new business meetup, we just started our business yesterday. We're going to do, you know, we're an MLM company and we just started selling Rodan and Fields yesterday, right? Like, you're screwed. Like, you're not going to find six-figure projects, right? So you need to go where the money is at. Go where people that have money, like, I say real business owners, but that's kind of like, I don't know, that just sounds mean. Go to where more established businesses are, right? Maybe that means going to like conferences and expos where people to have a booth are spending $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, right? They're flying their entire sales team to Miami for 4 days, right? Like, those people have money and it might feel really uncomfortable. You might be overwhelmed with being in a room with like so much craziness going on, but like, you got to go where the money's at, right? That's like the number one thing that you have to do. And then assuming that you're going to where the money's at, you're able to build relationships with people, enough trust and credibility to where they'll actually allow you to find some expensive problems, as Jonathan Stark says, then you have to have a sales process. You need to sell like a pro, right? You can't be like, oh, hey, you know, we should follow up and talk sometime and, you know, maybe you could hire, you know, it's like, no, you need to be like, cool, like, let's jump on a call. Let's see if we can do a quick needs assessment with you. And, you know, if it seems like we have, you know, we're in the same ballpark, then we're going to go into our discovery process where we're going to go through and, you know, achieve X, Y, and Z outcome. Usually it takes between 3 and 6 meetings. Like, you know, we'll fly to you. You cover expenses. Awesome. Cool. Check the box. We'll present a proposal and a solution to you. If it looks good, we'll move forward, right? I mean, you have to have some kind of series of interactions to build value, trust, and credibility. And you need to lead the way and direct how that process is going to happen and kind of act like you've done it before, right? Because somebody's not going to write you a $100,000 check if it seems like you're their first go, right?
True. But I guess that's like another topic there with the confidence. And I don't know, part of me thinks that you should just like, if you haven't done that before, you should just give it a go and make a fool of yourself and realize it's not a big deal.
Well, look, I mean, so totally. So, I mean, the very first proposal that I ever submitted was a high 5-figure deal. And I was if you want to talk about a story, like, I mean, I like in the moment, I thought I was doing everything right. In retrospect, I did everything painfully wrong. And I felt flat on my face and just totally lost the deal, right? Like, I mean, I could go into like, it was this nonprofit out in California.
I do want to hear the story,
A friend of mine worked worked there, right? So we literally had the inside edge. And, you know, he told us exactly what they wanted to hear. And he gave us the questions that we were going to be asked in the pitch meeting ahead of time. And like literally he was like our inside angel, right? This organization happened to be, so first of all, we wrote the proposal before we ever went into our meeting with them. Like they gave us an RFP. We wrote the entire proposal before we ever went on site with them and actually did any kind of discovery and needs assessments. I went into we had one one-on-one meeting with them, and you know, it happened to be with this organization that was, it's called the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault. 99.9% women. My friend that worked there was the only guy, right? We went in and like what we thought you should wear to a big pitch meeting. Like I had a black suit on, white shirt, like tie, you know, my partner did as well. We went in there, we had like a PowerPoint, we lectured, we told them everything that they should be doing with their website and with their online marketing and this and that. And, you know, at the end of the day, like they asked us if we had any questions for them. And we said, nope, we've got everything that we need. Like we think we're going to do great with this, blah, blah, blah. Right. Yeah. The company that won the deal, like they submitted a initial proposal that said, based on what you've told us so far, we think this project could be somewhere between, you know, 80,000 and 250,000. If you want us to get more specific, we need to spend some time with you, you know, one-on-one. They went in, you know, polo shirts with nothing prepared. And all they just did was ask questions and build relationships with the people in the room. And they, you know, made sure that everybody got heard and they took notes and they talked about, you know, they regurgitated all the problems and pains and, you know, the value, and they quantified it for every single seat in the organization. I mean, they just crushed us on it, right? Which is why they actually ended up winning. We thought the deal was, they told us their budget was 70,000. And the company that won the project ended up winning $150,000 project.
Oh, damn.
Right? But, you know, I was 23 years old. Who cares, right? Had 1,000 more opportunities like that in my future. And it was a really big lesson, right? That was like a big six-figure lesson.
Yeah.
And it was definitely painful. We found out, like, we went in for the big pitch, and we found out, like, later that evening, my friend came home. We were staying at his house, and he came home, and, you know, we were already celebrating because we thought we won the business. And he was like, no, guys, you lost. And so.
It sucks, but it is such a good lesson. I think that's actually, oh, man, it's awesome for listeners as well. So I hope someone takes something out of that. I feel like I've read like a whole bunch on this before. I'm just trying to think of where I like somewhere that people could go and learn more about this. Do you have any resources off the top of your head?
You mean like that we've put together?
Sure. Or somewhere, if it's a book or.
Yeah, I mean, like there's tons of books out there. I mean, we have obviously at yougurus.com, we have our blog. We have, you know, some courses. If your listeners or whatever has any interest in, like we have a sales course, I'm happy to give them that for free. We have, it's basically our web design sales kit. So it runs through my, it's called the interaction model, basically how to sell, you know, 5- and 6-figure specifically website projects, but you could definitely apply it to most any other creative services. I had somebody the other day that was in a completely different business. Like they were selling event management services or something. And she was like, oh, I went through your web design sales kit and I don't sell websites, but I just sold my first $100,000 event. I was like, okay, cool. So anyways, if, I mean, I'm happy to give your listeners that.
Yeah, so where do people go then?
Just shoot me an email, brent@yougurus.com, and just be like, hey, I heard you on James' podcast, and I can just hook you up with that. If you go to our website, you'd have to buy it, so don't do that. Just email me, and I'll hook you up with that for free.
That is one hell of an offer. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So look, I mean, some other good books on selling in particular. I think Spin Selling is interesting. You know, I think there's so many good sales books out there.
I feel like Win Without Pitching might be the one I was thinking.
Yeah. Of. So Blair Enns, right? Win Without Pitching, Blair is that's right. Great read as well. Right. I mean, I think everybody is more or less saying the same things. I think the challenge for a lot of creatives and a lot of people that are kind of accidental entrepreneurs is actually putting it to work, taking the chance and being like, okay, you know, Blair or Brent or James told me that, you know, I need to qualify my clients. So, you know, what most people do is they ask them qualifying questions, but instead of saying no and, you know, moving on, they just keep acting like they're some client that they want to win. Like, you're like, oh, hey, how about how much revenue are you doing this year? Oh, well, we haven't started our business yet. Oh, really? Are you funded? Like, do you have like an investor or are you putting in a, nope, just putting this on my MasterCard. Oh, cool. Let's go do discovery. Like, no, be like, hey, you know, maybe Wix is a better fit for you. Like,
yeah,
you know, like actually like applying this stuff is, I think for most people, it's a lot harder than just learning about it.
What I've seen a few people doing with those kind of clients lately actually is doing like a website as a service type thing where they build their own, you can build your own platform for DIY websites. Like whether that's a road you want to go down, it is an option that I'll, because we had an interview with Matt Rodella who teaches people how to build their own system for those clients. So I might link to that episode.
Like a low value kind of productized service that says like, hey, if you're looking to DIY, like go over here and I've got like a little $500 bucket for you.
Yeah. And even if they're like not trying to DIY, but they do have a DIY budget, then I mean, it's just an option. We have a little chat. I had a chat with a guy about it on the episode, on the podcast, and it was pretty interesting. So by the way, yeah. I just found that book I was looking for called Bag the Elephant. That was the other one that talked about going into businesses and finding your champion inside the business. And like, yeah, it was interesting.
I have not read Bag the Elephant. I'll add that to my... to my list. You give me homework, James.
There's going to be so many links in this show notes. Like trying to take notes as we go without like typing too much. And there's so much here. I feel like we could keep going forever, but I also think that there's so much stuff for people to think about already in this chat. So I reckon we should wrap it up unless there's something else you want to go over.
I'm just here for your audience to, you know, get some value. I mean, my vision, and our vision at YouGurus is, we want to help, digital agency owners achieve freedom in their business and life. And I think, you know, first and foremost, it's like, you know, I think of revenue, I think of cash as kind of oxygen in your business. So a lot of times we focus our energies there first is like, you know, do you have enough money coming in the door that you can pay yourself a market-based wage? If the answer to that question is no, then we need to focus almost exclusively on marketing and sales systems. You know, if you do have some, you know, you're making good money, but you're like stressed out to like the nth degree and you're not actually having fun with your business, like cool, we need to work on like your delivery and fulfillment systems. And like, you know, if you're growing your business and you feel like you have people that are working for you that don't share your vision and don't really, align with what you want to accomplish, then we might need to do some work on like leadership and stuff like that. But like freedom for me is really all about that, like time, money, passion, right? If one of those is not really in alignment, like we just go to where, there's the most pain. So it's just a good model framework for people to think about in their own business. Like is the money bucket not happening in the way they want? If it isn't, then you should spend your time focusing on that. If you are making money, but you're not spending your time how you want, cool, do that one next. And then like that passion is kind of where I say third, because have you ever seen like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Yeah. Like you have self-awareness at the top and like basic food and security at the bottom. Like, cool. Like passion for me, like let's figure that out. Once we have like the money, right, the time, right, then we can focus on like, hey, let's align and split the market or your services in a way that really fulfills you and do that kind of in the last order.
Nice. Love it. So yeah, and I can vouch for YouGurus training courses because I have seen the inside, and you guys have so much stuff in there that to help people pretty much any point along the journey, from what I can tell.
I mean, you do. We have a bunch. We do like weekly with our community. We do like weekly workshops and webinars. You know, you multiply weekly by, you know, 5-6 years, and you start to get some, like, you know, lots of content, right? So that's probably one of the big things internally that we're spending a lot of time on right now is, you know, how to get our newest customers, the people that are joining like this week, to the right material so that they're focused on, you know, they're focused on learning what's important in their business today, not what they think they might need in like 18 months. Right. And so that's kind of, that's like one of the biggest challenges kind of back of the house for us right now is, you know, we have hundreds of trainings and how do we make sure that when somebody is coming in that's brand new, like knows where to go, knows what to get first. Cause that's, that can be a big challenge, right? We don't want somebody just like inundating themselves with like 3 months of training that's not actually solving their problems today.
Yeah. To get to that, like the current problem is like, yeah, that's huge. Cause so many courses, I guess, just try to teach everything. And it's just like, you know, you might not even be ready for half of that stuff. So meeting them where they are is the go. So where should people go? Just yougurus.com. Email you, obviously, brent@yougurus.com. Just in case you don't know, that's yougurus.com.
and sorry, I think I just talked over my own URL. So that's awesome. Yes, you can check out our website, yougurus.com, yougurus.com. We also have a podcast. So we just published our 90th episode. So you can check that out. If you guys dig podcasts, obviously you're listening to James' podcast right now. So if you want more good podcast stuff, we've got some amazing guests on there that have just, you know, there's some fantastic people. I think we've had some similar guests as you as well, James. And yeah, if you want that course, shoot me an email, brent@yougurus.com.
That is one hell of an offer and I will be promoting the heck out of it.
And yeah, hopefully just crush my email box.
Yeah, James. That's the plan.
make me feel, you know, make me regret giving out my personal email on your podcast.
That is absolutely the plan. thank you for coming on, Brent. This has been freaking awesome.
James, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening in. If you've enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes and leave a review or share it with someone you think will get something out of it. Otherwise, I'll see you in the next episode.
Discover how to grow your agency, earn more, and work less at agencyhighway.com. Head over there to get resources from this episode and full transcripts. See you next time. This episode was brought to you by Content Snare. If you're a digital agency or just need to get content or info from your clients, Content Snare can help you collect it on time and without enormous email trails. Give it a try at contentsnare.com.